From the Center for the Study of God and Culture and the studios of Faith Talk 1500, it's the Paul Edwards Program. Information, commentary, and podcast are always online at godandculture.com. Now, here's your host, Paul Edwards.
And we welcome you in here to the second hour of the Paul Edwards Program all across southeastern Michigan, northwest Ohio, and parts of Ontario, Canada, here in the Center for the Study of God and Culture, where you can engage us at 866-423-9578 and online at godandculture.com. The Bibles are coming in, and I appreciate that very, very much. We've got a long way to go to get to 15,000 by Friday. But right now, we are at 6,555 Bibles, $4 to send a Bible, 1-800-YES-WORD, 1-800-937-9673. Thanks to Roger in Windsor for a $40 gift. There's 10 Bibles, actually 20 because of the match, on their way to Russia. William in Detroit, an $8 gift. I need more of those $8 gifts. I need more of those $4 gifts. One Bible, two Bibles, three Bibles. 1-800-YES-WORD, 1-800-937-9673. And Dietrich in Taylor, my hometown of Taylor, a gift of $40. There's 20 more Bibles on their way to Russia. We're partnering with Bible League today to send 15,000 Bibles by Friday to Russia from Detroit. Need your help. 1-800-YES-WORD, 1-800-937-9673. Thanks to my friends John and Deborah in Troy for a very generous gift of $1,000. Very generous. There's 250 Bibles with the match. That's 500 more. We are now at 6,805 Bibles on their way to Russia. Need everybody participating. 1-800-YES-WORD, 1-800-937-9673. We have been on this program following the story of the Dearborn Four ever since the we've actually been following the ministry of Acts 17 since over the last couple of years. They've been harassed by the organizers of the Arab American Festival in Dearborn, and now the Dearborn Police and the mayor of Dearborn has joined the harassment. My word, not the attorney's word. We'll find out from him whether or not he thinks they're being harassed. But they were arrested, charged with public disturbance, disobeying a police officer. They were acquitted. Four of them were acquitted, at least on one of the charges. But that's not the end of the story. And joining me to talk about it is the attorney that represented the so-called Dearborn Four in their jury trial. In Dearborn, Rob Muse is with the Thomas More Law Center, and you can visit them online at www.thomasmore.org. And Rob, it's great to welcome you here to the Paul Edwards Program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Is it your view as the attorney that that maybe the city of Dearborn has kind of harassed or at least overstepped their bounds here with these guys?
More than harassed, they violated their fundamental constitutional rights. You know, you've mentioned them. I'm with the Thomas More Law Center. We describe ourselves as the sword and shield for people of faith. We had to draw out the shield to defend against these bogus, false criminal charges, which we did and got a jury verdict, unanimous, of not guilty late on Friday. And now we're going to be drawing out the sword, sharpening it up, and file a civil rights lawsuit to vindicate their fundamental constitutional rights, which were trampled on by the City of Dearborn Police.
What were the original charges against these four?
A breach of peace. It was a breach of the peace for doing nothing more than daring to show up at the Dearborn Arab Festival and peacefully preaching the gospel to Muslims. And they were literally put in handcuffs and hauled away and taken to jail, and they spent a night in jail. They had, thankfully, they had video cameras. They brought three with them this time because they were very cautious about, you know, what the way they were treated in 2009, as you sort of indicated. And so they brought a third camera just to capture sort of the background, and thankfully they did. So when the police were testifying about how these, you know, crowds of 60 people, and they were inciting a riot and screaming to the crowd and making all these claims in their testimony, and then you say, well, here's the videotape. None of it happened.
Is it illegal on the streets of an American city to videotape or to take pictures? Okay, I mean, is a police officer within his right to say you got to turn that camera off?
Not at all. I mean, could you imagine a police? I mean, right? There's a reason why police officers don't like video cameras, right? A la Rodney King and all these other instances.
Right.
You know, they don't like the cameras. Well, you know what? There's private citizens who use the cameras to protect themselves. They have no right to tell somebody to shut off that that video camera when they're not doing anything that's illegal. It's a public event. It's a public place. You know, even the chief of police said, well, it's okay, you know, if you want to videotape, you know, somebody riding the carnival rides or anything else, but what, you can't videotape police engaging in misconduct?
Right.
But that wasn't the basis. They claimed that they were inciting a riot, that they were engaging in disruptive behavior, and none of that was true. They were peacefully expressing their religious beliefs, and again, thankfully, they captured it on camera. They have no basis for telling them to shut off the cameras any more than, you know, the police are engaged in misconduct. Can you imagine them going up to, you know, pick your three-letter station, ABC, NBC, CBS, and telling them, you know, shut off your cameras. We don't want you to capture this police misconduct that's about to take place.
Right.
That's
right.
Nonsense. I mean, we have freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, all protected by the First Amendment. You might have an Arab festival, but they didn't declare martial law that now these, you know, Arab festival rules trump the U.S. Constitution. And that's what they were doing, and it's unfortunate. You know, they made my clients go through, you know, misery for, you know, several months and a week-long trial, which is, you know, it's trying in itself,
yes.
No pun intended. And so this was a gross breach of fundamental constitutional liberties.
You know, I've just returned from 10 days in Russia. I go to Russia frequently. I'm there about every other year for one reason or another. And I was just there helping Bible League distribute Bibles to believers in Russia who've never had one. And it was interesting because we were told several times, you know, as tourists there, we would have cameras on. And we were stopped several times by Russian militia and police officers to say, you can't take a picture of this. And when I heard about what happened in Dearborn, it so reminds me of how I'm often treated as a tourist in Russia, the former Soviet Union, yeah. Where they don't have the freedoms. And I'm thinking, are we on the verge of losing our freedoms here in the United States?
You know, and when I, in my closing argument to the jury, when I, you know, we played the video and they saw the video, and this was my reaction when I first saw it, and what I was, you know, sort of expressing to them, is that when you watch this video, you have to pause for a minute and say to yourself, am I in the United States of America? Did what I just see happen on a city street in the United States of America?
Right.
And the answer to that question is yes, and that is alarming that would, in fact, take place. And, you know, you're exactly right. We live in a free society. We don't live in a police state. And the thing, too, and, you know, one of the other things they were arguing in trial is like, oh, there was a free First Amendment free speech zone. You know, I love these free speech zones.
Yeah.
It's a little cage they put you in. Well, the First Amendment right to freedom of speech and the free exercise of religion is not about the right to catharsis. It's not about, you know, go sit in a closet and talk to yourself. It's about the right to engage in meaningful debate, or in this case, to meaningfully engage people in dialogue about your religious beliefs.
Right.
That's what it's about. It's not about just going standing in some little corner and, you know, have at it and you know, do your little free speech thing. And that's the way the city of Dearborn treats the right to freedom of speech, which is exceedingly alarming, and quite frankly, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rob. I just got an email a few minutes ago from one of our listeners and a friend of mine in Windsor, Canada. Roger writes to me, the mayor of Dearborn spoke repeatedly about having provided quote-unquote free speech zones at the festival. Is this a legitimate bending of your free speech laws, or is the entire USA a free speech zone? And then I think he, quite tongue-in-cheek, says, Canadians are eager to know. I mean, isn't the entire United States of America a free speech zone?
You know, I know, and you know, and I got to tell you though, it's frightening to me because they are more and more courts are looking at these, and they call them, you know, so-called time, place, manner restrictions, and they are upholding some of these restrictions on First Amendment liberties. You know, they have these draconian restrictions on distributing religious literature, and I already have a civil rights lawsuit against the city of Dearborn that's on appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals challenging their literature distribution rules at the festival. But this whole idea that we can just, you know, we can basically declare martial law and say the First Amendment doesn't apply because we're happening to having an Arab festival on city streets is this – It's crazy, and you know, but that's the direction that we're heading. And but these free speech zones, I've seen them come up. They say on some college campuses, well, we have a free speech zone, and we've challenged them before. And many times we get them struck down because they only use those when it's people who are engaging in speech that they don't like. So they put them in this little corner and say, you know, this is where you guys have to talk. And it really is a frightening. And it, you know, you're the individual who wrote that email is exactly right. The entire United States is a free speech zone. That's where we live. That's what this country is about. Those are the values that our country, you know, that our country respects, and at least hopefully will continue to. But you know, it's a battle. You got to fight these things at every turn, and that's, you know, that's why we, that's what I do for a living with the Thomas More Law Center, is defending those rights. And, you know, we defended these four, you know, pro bono. They wouldn't have the money to hire attorneys to do a week long
sure.
trial and all the preparation that would
yep.
go into it. You know, it's just really the police are overstepping, the prosecution's overstepping, the city's overstepping, and this mayor who's on this attack
yeah.
against Act 17 apologetics. You know, he describes him essentially as being racist. Well, two of the individuals were Muslims themselves. Nabil Qureshi, his whole family's from, you know, from Pakistan. They're all Muslims. His mom, his dad, his brothers, his sisters. So what, he's saying he's racist towards his own people? It's nonsense. Nagin Mayal, her family's from Afghanistan. They're all still Muslim. And Nabil will tell you, and he said it on the stand under oath, the most important decision he ever made in his life was when he became a Christian and he found Christ. And he wants to share that with other Muslims. And that's why he goes to the Arab Festival, even though people threaten him with violence, threaten him with, you know, physical assaults, and now you have the police putting him in handcuffs and throw him in jail. Well, he's going to come right back again next year.
Good.
Because that is so important to him, to preach the gospel, particularly to Muslims, and they need to hear it. And he does
yes,
it in a very civil, peaceful way. And in this country, that's protected by the First Amendment.
Attorney Rob Muse is my guest. He's with the Thomas More Law Center. He represented the quote-unquote Dearborn Four, the four street evangelists who were arrested this summer at the Arab American Festival for allegedly disturbing the peace. They've been vindicated now, acquitted by a jury last Friday. The thing that I've been saying ever since a year ago, Rob, is that Sharia law is prevailing on the streets of Dearborn, at least during the Arab American Festival. I hear from Christians who have evangelistic ministries. They're stationed in Dearborn. They email me all the time, and I'll get five or six emails as soon as the show's over from these folks saying, look, you're really making our job difficult. We're trying to be peaceable with the Muslims, and you're making it difficult by going on the air and saying that Sharia law is taking over the streets of Dearborn. Am I overstating the case? What is your – and you're free to disagree with me, but from a legal constitutional perspective, is Sharia law encroaching the rights of the citizens of Dearborn on the streets of Dearborn?
I fully agree with you. And here's how. Now, certainly, you know, to say that, you know, Sharia law has been codified as part of the city of Dearborn ordinances, I don't think that's exactly what you're saying. That's not what I
right.
would say. But certainly the concepts of Sharia are pervading, in particular during the Arab Festival, and that is, you know, these Christians who want to not, you know, and it's interesting because the Christians that are at the Arab Festival who aren't the proactive ones like George Sage and my other lawsuit and Act 17 apologetics, who actually confront the Muslims and confront their ideas and confront their religion and challenge them in a very peaceful way, but challenge them in dialogue and challenge their ideas. The Christians who do that, and not just the ones who want to, you know, who want to hold hands and we all just get along and let's just talk past each other and never engage in any meaningful debate. The Christians who are going there to try to convert minds and convert hearts and to convert Muslims to Christianity and do it in a very peaceful, loving way, they're the ones that are being attacked. Mm-hmm. If you go there with the intention of not to convert people, with just to, you know, to hand out literature and really to make no difference whatsoever, in my view, they leave you alone because it doesn't matter because you're not a threat to them. But the individuals who go there, who actually try to convert Muslims to Christianity, they're the ones that are attacked. And that's, and when you look at the concept of Sharia, I mean, that's very much a part of that. And so I think you're exactly right. I think it's not codified anywhere, but certainly the concept that if you express your religious beliefs in a way that's meaningful, and try to convert somebody from Islam, you're going to be pushed back, and that's what I've seen, and that's I think been witnessed by the other Christian missionaries that I've dealt with. Those ones who go there to convert minds, convert hearts, they're the ones that are under attack.
One of the reports that I read Saturday, I mean, the jury verdict came down Friday, right?
Yes, late. It was close to 8 o'clock, around 7:30 and 8 o'clock.
Late that night or early Saturday morning, I read a report that that one of the evangelists, the female, and forgive me, I can't remember her name, but evidently she was the one doing the videotaping. Some of the early reports said that she was convicted of disobeying a police officer. Is that true?
She had a separate charge, and we're actually going to appeal that. And the basis, and you got to know a little bit of background for this. We moved to dismiss because she was confronted by police officers who told her to shut off her camera. She said, "I don't think I can do that." And he says, "Well, I'm investigating a criminal complaint." She said, "What was the criminal complaint?" And the officer wouldn't tell her. He said, "Shut off your camera." And she says, "Give me a second." And he grabbed her arm. She said, "Let go of me." And he continued to grab her arm. She said, "Let go of me." Continued to grab the arm. "Let go of me." And then he grabbed the camera from her. We moved to dismiss the charge, saying, look, the officer had no lawful authority to tell her to stop videotaping. The only information he had was somebody complained that she was standing off in a distance videotaping them without his consent. And I asked the officer on the stand under oath, "Is that a crime?" And he said no. We moved to dismiss the charge pre-trial, and the judge says, no, he had probable cause. So the only thing the jury had to decide was, well, did he give her an order? Because the judge had already determined that the order was lawful. Did he give her an order to shut off the camera? Did she disobey it? And the jury said, yes, she did. So it was essentially a technical violation, but it's a constitutional violation, which, sure, the judge's preliminary ruling was wrong. But she was also charged with breach of the peace. So the gravamen of all the claims, all the breach of the peace against all four, the jury came back not guilty. That one, that one incident where it was like a 30-second dialogue where he said, "Shut off the camera," and she said, "I don't know if I can." And then he grabbed the camera from her. The jury said, well, she disobeyed the police officer's order, so that's a violation.
Well, it's interesting to me because without – correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but it seems to me without that videotape, the jury would have really only had a he said, she said kind of thing to go on. And it seems to me the videotape would vindicate her story. And now you've got a police officer under oath saying that what she was doing was not breaking the law. How in the world does a jury convict on that?
Well, it goes back to the point that this was a preliminary ruling on the legality of the arrest itself. And the court, would instruct the jury that, look, that is not an issue for you to decide. I've already decided that. So that's why we have to appeal it to the appellate court.
Just for clarity's sake, the jury didn't convict.
The jury had to decide the question of whether was an order given to her. He already determined that he was in the lawful performance of his duties because he was investigating a criminal complaint, even though the criminal complaint wasn't even a valid criminal complaint. Yeah. And so he gave her an order. Did she violate the order? I mean, without the Fourth Amendment issue, what is there to decide? The jury had to decide, okay, did he give an order? Did she obey the order? And the response is no, she didn't immediately obey the order. The officer had to take the camera away, and so she disobeyed the officer's order. I mean, it was unfortunate. I mean, I it was kind of surprising that the jury would even come back on that, but that issue is ripe for appeal. In fact, we're going to be filing our notice of appeal on that before the end of this week. And it's going to appeal the original ruling that the officer had a constitutional right to be able to tell her to do that to begin with. That's a problem.
Yeah. The as we wrap this up, the next step, as you noted at the beginning of our conversation, Rob, is a civil rights suit. What as briefly as you can, what does that entail? I mean, is this like seeking some sort of monetary damages for what these four folks have been through?
Yeah, it's going to seek declaratory relief, meaning that we want a court to declare that the way they were treated by the city police violated their rights to freedom of speech under the First Amendment, their right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures under the Fourth Amendment, and their right to equal protection of the law under the 14th Amendment. We'll also be seeking a preliminary injunction to prevent this from happening in the future, and we'll also be seeking damages for the fact that they were, placed in handcuffs and put in jail for an entire evening, and it's likely we'll also be seeking punitive damages because this was a reckless disregard for their constitutional rights. And there's probably going to be some senior officials that are going to be named in the lawsuit as well. I'm still working out the details, but I've been putting this together for the last, since they first brought this to my attention. And now that the trial is over and my attention is going to be focused on, away from the criminal side to the civil side. And I still have the appeal on that one issue with Ms. Mayell.
Rob Muse is an attorney with the Thomas Moore Law Center in Ann Arbor. They have represented and still represent the Dearborn Four. By the way, do they mind being called the Dearborn Four?
I think some people call them the Freedom Four, the Dearborn Four. I think, you know, I don't think they care one way or the other. They just want the, they want the message to get out too, because they, you know, see how they were treated. And you know, one of the things very good throughout the, very interesting throughout this trial is that when the videotape that I was permitted to play during the trial, a lot of it was Nabil Qureshi discussing, you know, his faith, talking about Jesus Christ, and it was, you know, and there was a sense of a satisfaction that, you know what, the word is being spoken here in a court of law, and
that's
the jurors
awesome.
Are hearing it, and all the people that are listening are hearing it, and there was, you know, there was something very satisfying about that component of all this, and you know, they had a great attitude going into all this, and you know, it was in many respects for them it was a blessing to go through this trial. It was a blessing to be persecuted. It was a blessing to have people bear false witness against them, because they got to carry the cross and walk the way of Christ throughout all this. So it's, you know, they you know, thank God for the jury verdict. But it's you know, this is what they're called to do as Christians, and you know, Christ was crucified and put on a cross, and so why would we expect anything less when we try to follow in his footsteps?
Well, to the audience, I say, even though they've been acquitted, the Dearborn Four, the story continues, and we'll continue to follow it, and you can continue to follow it at www.thomasmoore, and Moore has one O, thomasmoore.org. And Rob Muse is the attorney for these young Christian evangelists who boldly stood up against the city of Dearborn and proclaimed their faith. And Rob, we appreciate you spending so much time with us here this afternoon on the Paul Edwards program to give us an update. And as we follow this story, I'm sure we'll talk again.
Yes, thank you very much for having me.